Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here with
Dan,
Chris,
Lee.
We've got Monaco coming up.
We have.
And I think we're going to talk about that in a bit.
We probably should, with it being a Formula One podcast and that.
And it being a Formula One race.
Yes. But, the most famous, probably.
Yeah. Well, the first Monaco fact of the night. It marks the 50th anniversary of the McLaren team's first race with Bruce McLaren himself in the car.
I believe that's 50 years ago today as we're recording this on Monday.
That would be right.
They're clearly going to be covered in glory then this weekend.
Well, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it, to see a McLaren 1-2, but I don't think that's going to...
If you believe Ron Dennis and Eric Boullier, then it might.
Eric Boullier said that something along the lines of he didn't know whether Ferrari would be a threat at Monaco. I don't know if he means to Mercedes or to McLaren. I'm a little bit unsure about that.
Either. Maybe it was cakes.
Yeah, Ferrari might be a threat to the catering van. Because, yeah.
Well, there's some nice patisseries around the area, I've heard.
Maybe they've got Ross Brawn coming in just for the day as a guest.
And that's why the patisserie is under, under
fire. Is he bringing his own fish?
Possibly.
Well, McLaren, well, in particular, Ron Dennis have said they will be the ones to unseat Mercedes when they finally start losing.
But that's the interesting point is the way that that's worded is when Mercedes start losing. We'll unseat Mercedes eventually.
Quick point.
When Mercedes start losing,
Mercedes lost last week.
That is a good point. Mercedes did lose in Spain.
They didn't lose. They just didn't win.
No, they
lost.
They lost.
they didn't win five corners.
No, they definitely didn't. But we spoke about that lots and lots on the last. Yeah, at length.
On the last.
As did many other people.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's
yeah. But none of them are as interesting as we are.
Just want to say, if you got through all last week's 2 hours, we applaud you.
Yeah, nice one. Thank you very much for listening. But yeah, it's the way Ron Dennis has worded it. It's just basically when Mercedes start failing, well then we'll be there to. Well, to dethrone them, essentially.
Yeah, we'll be the best team on the grid next.
Yeah, because at the moment we're in the midfield after being at the back of the grid last year, so maths tells me that I will be at the front of the grid next year in all of my cars. Oh, no, wait, hang on, I don't drive.
Honestly, you have one McLaren team boss doing well himself at Monaco 50 years ago, and they all think they can do it.
Exactly, yeah.
There's definitely like a theme, isn't it? When you look at Formula One teams that have an older boss that's been there for a while, there's definitely a dip in the team performance, as there's a dip in the performance of the manager, isn't there? I'm thinking Jordan. Sauber.
Tyrrell towards the end.
Yeah.
You might actually have a point there.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying.
I feel like saying Williams, but I don't think it's quite right to say Williams because I don't mean Williams towards Frank Williams. I mean Williams towards Patrick Head.
Patrick, he's been gone for a couple of years now, hasn't he, Patrick Head?
Yeah, Williams has been falling apart for a while now since it was red.
Now you might actually be onto something.
Winfield, not winning anything.
No, the won a field, it's just they were meant to win on track.
Yeah. Didn't they both win a field in that was the BARs, wasn't it, who went off in the same corner in Belgium?
Oh yeah, the one that Jacques said it was the most exciting accident he'd ever had, and then Zonta went and replicated it about 10 minutes later.
Yeah, they both had the same crash at the same spot.
Yeah, a Winfield sounds like something in your American peanut hugging thing.
Not really.
It does. It sounds like something that like Chad Chadison would have to do.
No, I think that's more of a baseball thing. Because one thing I found out, I accidentally stuck some baseball on the other night, and there is a stat for everything, and everything is a stat.
And there's an advert for everything, and everything is sponsored by something else.
Oh, yeah, the home plate was sponsored by McDonald's all-day breakfast in the game that I watched the other night.
Baseball.
Other all-day breakfasts are available.
Baseball always comes across to me as if snooker was a field game.
No.
I don't know. It seems quite.
I quite like it on the PlayStation, and I think it's the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim have a player called Poo Holes. It's spelled P O Pujoles, but it's pronounced Pujols.
Oh,
you can't listen to his name being called out without going.
This is not the classiest hour or two that our listeners have.
Can
every
I get
week,
back?
Is it?
Can we get
back onto Formula One,
please? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. The other thing about McLaren is, as you have written down here, Chris, awesome chassis.
Because, apparently so.
Yeah, as it turns out, the McLaren was third in Sector 3 of Barcelona, which is the section of the track that is not down to the engine, it's down to the chassis.
Yeah, because you don't get to use the full potential of the engine in that sector, so that it's... And I don't know where this data has come from, but the BBC have reported that it's GPS data that they've gathered from somewhere. Maybe it's the BBC.
Satellites.
If it's GPS data, there's a damn good chance.
Exactly.
Is this the same GPS that said Toro Rosso was pants?
Possibly.
Point scoring Toro Rosso was pants.
If you think about it, if the Red Bull chassis are that good and the McLaren chassis are that good,
yeah,
the Ferrari engine must be phenomenal
for a terrible chassis.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's obviously not a terrible chassis here. No.
Comparatively, not as good.
No, we're talking top four here. You know, we're talking like the crazy, the foremost experienced constructors teams are building good cars.
Yeah,
you know,
just to put it into perspective, I believe team wise they are third. McLaren, I'm talking about here, are third in that all important twisty sector three. But Fernando Alonso, I believe, as a driver, was fifth behind both Red Bulls and both Mercedes in the practice sessions. Mm. Because of course Mercedes didn't make sector three, as we've just alluded to. They didn't even win turn five.
But I mean, McLaren in particular, Jenson Button, were saying all last year, as well as this year, how good the chassis was.
I was saying it was a very good car to drive.
Everything was about Honda being the weak link.
There is another thing that you've got to think as well, is if the, for whatever horsepower, I mean, this is going to be maths I can't do, but for whatever horsepower the McLaren's down, you've got that drop in speed, which is going to give you less aero. You know, even if your aero package is good, you're going to be lacking aero if you're lacking power, you know, and you're lacking speed, because that's where it comes from, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the more speed you've got, the more aerodynamic grip that you've got.
Yeah.
It's one of these, you need a degree in advanced engineering to be able to work out how they came by these numbers.
Yeah.
The way to think about it is there's only so... It's only so fast, I'm not going to get too scientific here, but it's only so fast that an object with a certain contact patch on a surface can go around a corner before centrifugal force takes it and spins it off into, in this case, a Formula One car into a barrier. So when there are slow-ish corners, when the car is going as fast as it possibly can, because if you look at Formula One cars and you're not a massive Formula One fan, they do kind of look very similar. So that kind of shape, that very similar weight, going around a corner at whatever speed, the slower corners are going to be very, very similar in speed or through all the cars. So they'll be able to tell through that data that they get going through the slower corners, which cars are more stable and which cars are able to accelerate earlier, or you know, which are more comfortable to drive.
Yeah.
Because science.
Can we just use that as the get out for everything in the future?
Because science.
Yeah.
Because things happen. I don't want to get too technical. If you want to get technical, go listen to someone else's podcast. Yeah.
In my professional opinion, as an amateur podcaster.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Renault again?
Do we have to?
We did that last year.
Well, yeah, but we talked about what Renault weren't doing. We can talk about what Renault are doing.
Is there positive Renault news?
There is positive Renault news.
What?
Is this just Renault or is this Targ as well?
But this is Renault and Targ. So this is the blue and the yellow versions of the engine. Mm. They were testing the new engine out in Barcelona last week. K-Mag reported that it's going to be about half a second quicker.
Mm-hmm. Sounds an awful lot, doesn't it?
It does, but I think that's an average, given.
I mean, half a second quicker over Barcelona.
It would have been in, well in the points.
It would have been in the points.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking sort of moving up from 13th, 14th to 5th, 6th.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. It sounds like an awful lot. I mean, you've got to think half a second all of a sudden over a lap. Surely that would put Red Bull well clear of Ferrari.
That's what Christian Horner is hoping for and has said.
Yes. Well, they are bringing the new engine to Monaco.
Which is one race early, because they were going to delay it till Canada.
It was going to be Canada, which is more of an engine-y circuit. Mm-hmm. But they're bringing it in, and everybody seems very, very happy about this.
Apparently the drivability is a lot better as well. Oh, it's not just power delivery, you know, it's smoother when it's delivered.
Smoother delivery of power as well, which does actually count for a lot.
It's all your traction, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Having driven old cars where the power delivery is not so great, and then driven new, I'm talking road going cars now, and then driven sort of newer road going cars where the power delivery is much smoother, given computer chips and things, you do notice it even on road going cars. So what's going to be like in a race car?
Yeah.
To somebody with a very sensitive bum. Mm.
This is only about half an inch off the tarmac.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing to think is Monaco is a circuit with more gear changes on average most of the others.
Was it something like 2,500 gear changes or something?
It's something ridiculous like that. I do remember reading, I think it was James Hunt's biography, where he had to do everything by the first lap in a manual car without a gear knob, and he punched a hole through his hand.
Yeah,
there was that many gear changes.
Yeah.
Obviously, when an engine changes gear, there's going to be some form of jolt, however small. And if they get less of a jolt for every gear change, that's going to help.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a smoother run. Could we see him creeping up into the points?
It's possible. I mean,
anything can happen in fucking Monaco.
Yeah.
They could win in Monaco.
They could win in Monaco. I mean, it depends on the weather. A wet Monaco is always a very, very fun Monaco to watch, generally speaking. But then
the year that Olivier Panis won, I still refer back to that one.
Yeah. 96 was that, I think. Monaco 96, so 20 years. That would be 20th anniversary. It's not really an engine power circuit, is it? I mean, we'll get onto this in our Monaco preview that we come onto later, but I can see why Renault are excited that they've got this half a second a lap or whatever it's going to be, more power in their engine, and Red Bull are looking forward to their tag mysteriously having exactly the same amount of power in their engine too.
Apparently it's a timing issue that they fixed on the tag engine.
Ba-dum-ts.
Oh. It was something they had to watch out for.
No, I'm not going to do the Azerbaijan one, which no. Stop.
It's horrible.
We haven't got time for this.
No, we haven't. Chris, you're back on the clock.
Oh, no. I'm the only one not to come up with one now. I feel terrible.
Anyway.
Just have to face it.
Yeah, it's. I don't think that Renault are... Shut up!
He handed you that one.
I don't think Renault are going to see a massive difference in Monaco. They might see a difference in their data than they were expecting to see from like, simulated to the track, but I don't think they're going to see anything major. I don't think they're going to be pushing right up the front with a brand new engine, because we've seen in previous years, we know how much more power that Mercedes engine has had in previous years, but they've not really run away from the field from Monaco, and you can't, because it's such a short circuit. You start lapping cars, you end up in traffic, you cause yourself more problems than you need to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was that race at Monaco, was it last year or the year before? I think it was the year before, 2014, where Felipe Massa said, I'm driving like my grandma. My grandma drives faster than this. Because he couldn't get closer to the car in front. It was just the Mercedes were controlling the pace of the race out front. They were just basically piddling around.
Mm-hmm. I'd argue that's been Massa's problem through most of his career.
That he drives like his grandma.
I mean, one thing about them bringing the upgraded engine in for Monaco is it means they get a full race weekend's worth of data out of it before they go to Canada, which is a circuit which needs a good engine.
Mm.
Unless they accidentally blow it up.
Unless...
Or someone crashes into them.
Mm. Can they get away with putting new engines in without penalties?
Upgraded engines, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all sound.
If they spend tokens.
If they spend tokens, then they take the engines out of the cars that are there.
That good, right.
They bolt the upgrades on, they put those engines back in, and it's not a changed engine, it's the upgrades have been fitted.
Right,
sound. Here are the tokens, there is your pencil troll.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Congratulations, Kevin Magnussen, yours has got bright pink hair.
That's the one. You've been to the fair before, you've won tokens and come up with a pencil troll.
I only win big one, I bet.
Oh, you go for the inflatable teddy bear.
Yeah. It's either that or a Power Ranger.
Fake Japanese Power Ranger.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an Ashens review for one of them somewhere.
A Power Roger.
That's something completely different.
Moving away entirely from power, we'll talk about Honda then.
Again, see what McLaren, did
yeah.
What's going on?
Well, Honda would be unhappy if they were asked to supply any other teams with engines under next year's regulations, as it turns out now. Obviously, Ron...
Bernie told them that they would have to, being the engine supplier that only supplies one team.
Yes, because they would be, if any of the teams lose their engine deal through... Well, I think the movie's now called Pulling a Horner.
Stamping your foot and
Stamping your foot and whinging incessantly.
Saying how rubbish your current engine supplier is and then
getting them to change their name.
And then 12 months later having a complete loving with them. But yeah, if anyone pulls a complete Horner rather than a partial Horner, then Honda would probably be first on the list because they supply the least number of teams.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that, and of course Ron still can say, we don't want you to supply any other teams, and Honda go, okay, we won't.
Honda are apparently as well waiting to for some point later in the season to splash out all of their tokens in order to give that McLaren all of the power that it's not got against Mercedes. They genuinely believe they can match Mercedes for power if they spend their tokens wisely.
Didn't they say this last year?
Yep.
And it didn't happen, did it?
No.
Is it going to be the same again this year?
Probably.
But we know it's got the power because Alonso is capable of setting fastest laps.
Yeah.
It's got the power over one lap.
It's got the power. It's how long it can have the power before it just goes, yeah, see ya.
Yeah.
It also doesn't harvest the what's it called, the MGUH. Doesn't harvest that very much.
Yeah. One thing I have noticed, though,
an energy harvesting problem with
the back end of this year's McLaren compared to last year's, is you can tell when the car's harvesting because the red light flashes on the back.
Flashing.
I've seen it flashing a lot more this year than I have last year.
Yeah.
Because the MGUH and the MGUK are the two main harvesting bits, the H for heat and K for kinetic energy, the old KERS. The MGUK is obviously harvesting more in braking zones coming up to corners than it was last year because you see the flashing actually going through the corner instead of just into the corner.
Right.
So if you watch out for, and especially this weekend, if they can get the camera angles right, you'll actually see the red harvesting light flashing a lot more on the McLaren than you would have seen it last season.
Yeah.
So they've got that aspect of it sorted out a bit.
Yeah, I mean, they either have, or it's the fact that when it is harvesting, it's not harvesting enough energy, so you're seeing it harvest more.
Well, the drivers have adjusted their styles to help it harvest more.
That's also possible. We know that Jenson Button in particular is a very adaptive driver when it comes to having to switch what he has to do to adapt to the conditions presented to him.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing to... I've just completely lost my train of thought.
I've wondered, with the Honda shenanigans, since they've come into Formula 1, not only have their engines been rubbish in Formula 1, their MotoGP team is rubbish. It's not rubbish.
It's two completely separate divisions.
Well, yeah, but the money's all come from the same place, and I wonder whether they've pushed the budget too thin. It just seems like too much of a coincidence to me.
I wouldn't even think that the money from one side. I
know what you mean, but it just seems like a coincidence to me that all of a sudden you're the Honda, which in MotoGP used to be a rocket strapped to a bike, can't outdrag a Yamaha now, and it gets out-dragged by Ducatis.
I see what you mean.
But and it would be
akin to saying
but it's not the like Yamaha it's different
is,
times.
The Yamaha bike is good this year in MotoGP because their keyboards are terrible.
I don't think it's quite that separate.
I think with that
one you're comparing apples and oranges because I mean the MotoGP.
But it's happened at exactly the same time as well.
Sod's law.
But,
the MotoGP engines aren't hybrid technology.
No, well, yeah, I realise that. But when Honda were going to come into Formula One, they did turn around and say that there's a lot that they can bring from the bikes to Formula One.
Disappointment.
Well, yeah. But,
disappointment for somebody Spanish that's driving one of them.
Yeah, disappointment and cheating.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder whether there's been manpower moved around. It could be something as simple as that.
It could well be.
Just engineers.
Well, we know how that's affected Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg's fortunes at Mercedes.
Yeah.
Been quite vocal with the garage swap there with Hamilton's mechanics. If you missed it in the last couple of podcasts, Hamilton's mechanics went to Rosberg's side of the garage and vice versa. They swapped a few around and all of a sudden Hamilton's got Rosberg's luck. So,
but it's not a conspiracy theory.
Apparently not.
Toto says not.
No.
This is not a conspiracy theory. It's not. I know. Hi, Lewis.
You're tearing me apart.
On to other subjects. Rio Haryanto. He doesn't know if he's going to make it to the end of the season. The money's going to run out.
I do.
Well, he thinks he's quick.
But he isn't.
I don't know if anybody else spotted it. I think you reposted it, Lee, on your personal account. That Formula One's very own Instagram account, they do actually have one, despite their aversion to social media, posted up a picture of Jenson Button with that quote on the picture. I know he thinks he's quick, but he isn't. And lots of people underneath had a massive argument as to who he was talking about, when it's quite obviously...
It was Rio Haryanto, because it happened right in the middle of the race. It was last week's Captain Obvious for us as well.
It was.
But he doesn't think he's going to be able to afford to get till the end of the season because some people haven't been texting enough.
His text to win campaign.
Yeah, the equivalent of the equivalent of what is it, 25p or 40p a time.
Yeah, for 12 million, is it?
Yeah, dollars. Which the Indonesian government say people should do, like taking medicine and do it three times a day.
Yep.
People haven't been taking their medicine in Indonesia.
Are we gonna
see Alex Rossi back in Imola by the end of the season? When is
it wouldn't be a Formula One season without him doing one race.
But there are 11 races he can do.
Yes, he is man's reserve driver for 11 races when it doesn't clash with his IndyCar commitments, which obviously is next weekend at Monaco is out because that's kind of the same time as the Indy 500.
It'd be nice to see how he does against Wöhrlein.
Also, what will be interesting is who is Manor's driver, reserve driver, when Alex Rossi is not available?
That is a very good question because.
Dave from accounts.
Yeah, the accounts man. Just
Massa's grandmother.
Is it Guido van der Garde? Will he turn up anyway?
He'll probably show up and
get told to go away.
Yeah, I'm just looking this up now.
I don't think
because...
he'd fit into the race suit of Rio Haryanto. Rio Haryanto is quite a small man, isn't he?
Oh, he'd try.
Guido van der Garde would be like wearing a Victorian bathing suit.
It looked like
if he tried on his racing suit.
He'd look like the Hulk partway through transformation.
Yeah, just a lot less angry. Yeah.
Sorry, which one's a lot less angry?
The Hulk.
Yeah, I don't actually think they have a full-time reserve driver because he's just going to act... It just... All I can find is everywhere saying that Alexander Rossi doesn't like Alex.
Xander.
Zandude.
Zoolander.
For people who can't drive good.
Yeah,
he's going to be their reserve driver for the 11 Grand Prix weekends
when he can.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we'll see an agreement put in place where Rio Haryanto races when Alex Rossi can't race.
I think they're more likely to find a person which can come in with all the money to do the rest of the races.
Pastor Maldonado.
Well, Venezuela doesn't have any oil money anymore, so
yeah, but don't forget
it's down to Max Chilton.
But
he's contracted, isn't
he? He's an IndyCar.
He's an IndyCar as well.
Yeah.
Didn't qualify last for the Indy 500.
He did absolutely destroy his car in practice, though, didn't he?
Did he?
I think he destroyed it to the point where he had to tweet a picture of his brand new car up, thanking the mechanics for making a fucking car out of what he referred to as the blue tub that was left.
Wonder if we'd see Bruno Senna making a comeback to Formula One. He does have the backing of most
Formula E corporations.
He is Formula E,
but Channel 4. The season's nearly over.
And Channel 4.
Oh, that's true. There's only two Formula E races left in the both on the same weekend. Yeah.
One, isn't there?
Two.
They have two, London and London. Two in London.
Oh, right.
One's on the Saturday, one's on the Sunday.
Did they have two in Germany on the same track?
I don't know.
No, they had one in Germany.
There was one in Germany at the weekend.
Yeah, yeah, but there's been another one earlier in the season.
No, that was
last year.
That was last season, last year on a different track.
Right.
The last race, last year's, or last season's, or last 2 years, whatever, race in Germany was at the old Tempelhof Airport, which is now being used as a homeless shelter, so they moved it to a street circuit for this year.
Right, okay.
It's just with the Formula E season running, was it September till July or something bizarre? Yeah,
end of June is London.
I must say, I watched the highlights package for Formula E and it was pretty fucking good.
It was.
Yeah, it was actually a good race. Just get rid of that EJ.
That move, that was it. It was on Jean-Eric Vergne, wasn't it? There was like literally a car's width there.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought there was what we were saying last week about respect from other drivers.
Yeah.
There was respect shown there.
Yes.
I have seen the highlights and I know exactly what you mean. There was respect shown there. The reason I mentioned Bruno Senna is because, as you say, there's only two races to go in the Formula E, and he does a lot of the punditry work with Channel 4, but he appears to just be freelancing everywhere because he does occasionally appear with Sky.
I don't think he'd go back into a Formula 1 team like that because I think he's too clever. I think he knows now, because if it's any money that's going to get put in, I don't think he's going to get sponsorship to race. It's going to be Senna money that goes in, and I think he knows he might as well just piss it against the wall as put money in to drive Manna for 11 races.
I mean, it could be Mercedes have somebody else on standby to put into the car.
I mean, like
Karin Chandhok. Karin Chandhok's dad's got all of the cash, all of it.
Well, he owns the. Is it
Every, India? He owns India.
He owns the bits of India that Vijay Mallya had to sell.
Yeah, so he owns India now.
Yeah, Esteban Ocon, perhaps.
Could be, because he's been testing.
Yeah.
For Renault and Mercedes.
So during the last day of testing, Pascal Wehrlein got called up to test for Mercedes. A very, very late call.
Because they wanted
a young driver in there.
They wanted a driver with on-track experience, more than Ocon had.
Yeah. So it was only announced the morning of the test that he would be taking over, but Pascal Wehrlein did do Mercedes' final day of testing at the...
caught everyone by surprise with all the news, and in fact, even the official Formula One Twitter didn't have him listed.
No.
On that day. What have we got next? Williams. They have hit the kill button for 2016 development. Or have they?
Well, Lee spotted this earlier on, before we started recording. An article from somewhere that said that Williams are not going to develop their car anymore in 2016.
It is finished, apart from they will have aero developments up until Hungary, possibly after it.
So they haven't hit the kill button on their 2016 development.
Worst story ever.
Absolutely. What a non-event. Who wrote that article?
It is.
Rob Smedley, probably.
It's basically the press release equivalent of going, right, this thing, I was going to do this thing, then I decided I wouldn't.
Yeah, I've got a great story for you guys. I did a thing, and then I decided not to do it.
They need to develop the car, and I think
they've got to push forwards, because if they don't, they're going to be in danger of being
salvaged.
Are they
just going to hit the reset button on the entire season and clear the decks?
for 2017.
Yeah, it's looking more and more likely they're going to be the first team that announces two new drivers for next year.
I think they need a
I think they need a new strategy team. That strategy team has got its head so far up its own backside, they don't know what they're doing.
I think they're so scared because they've missed so many opportunities, like we said over the years, that it's just a case of, we've got the cars and the points, how do we keep them there? And, you know, instead of trying to push forward, as we keep saying, yeah, it's just a case of keeping them somewhere in the top 10.
Their excuse is always, we are Williams. Like that excuses them from being rubbish. It's like, no, hang on a second. Williams used to win world championships all of the time. It doesn't matter if your budget is small.
I'm going to try stabbing someone and go, but I'm Lee. As you were, sir.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't, you know, well, we're Williams, we run on a smaller budget than most other teams, so we think we're doing quite well. Well, I'm sorry, but Williams used to win world championships.
They were the Mercedes of the late 90s, weren't they?
Well, yeah, right the way through the 90s.
Yeah,
absolutely. They
Red Bull's probably a better...
They were the team that they started bringing in restrictions on Formula One cars for, because Williams were so far ahead of and advanced of anyone else.
Yeah, and now you can just see them gradually falling backwards.
And if they're going to cut development now in 2016, they're already behind Red Bull and Ferrari, and therefore Mercedes. So they're going to find themselves overtaken by Force India.
They're probably trying to shoot themselves in the foot, but they found they're wearing clown shoes.
They're going to find themselves overtaken by Renault.
Yeah. Well, but see, the thing is,
Toro Rosso might even go past them.
I still wonder, though, whether it's totally the car.
Do you think they finally clicked, you know, this driver lineup's not working for us anymore?
I think there
because was it 2 years ago they did a very pally sort of press conference together on a video that released on social media.
We would
like to announce that we are both driving for Williams next year.
Yeah, it was back in November when they announced it.
They keep doing little things like that. There was something else on social media the other day.
It was about as awkward as when Jensen and Lewis were teammates and they did all those "We're Best Mates Really" videos.
Yeah,
and then Canada.
Yes.
That Canada race.
We'll reference in a couple of podcasts' time.
Yes.
When we're talking about Canada.
Yes.
If we ever do a best race ever podcast,
hands down,
it's well in the discussion.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might do that at some point on a slow news week.
I did a cry.
Maybe during the summer break.
I didn't do a cry, but I was definitely up on my feet. Like for that last lap, I really was.
Sports only ever made me do a cry one other time.
Damon Hill?
Not Damon, but when Jensen won the world championship, I did a sport cry. And the only other time I could think of doing a cry was when I was a kid watching Neighbours when Harold Bishop died.
But then it turned out he wasn't dead and he came back a few years later and his memory.
I it was never the same after that. I was just out. I could never return.
But are Williams going to come back? That's the question.
Oh, nice. Good segue. Back from the dead.
Yeah. That's like a train falling off the cliff, rolling down the cliff, and then landing perfectly on train tracks.
Simpson style.
Are you saying this podcast is some kind of train wreck?
I think it's an.
Or I'm rescuing it from being a train wreck.
You know that episode?
We've swerved away from the Formula One again.
Yeah, well,
it's an adrenaline ride.
But yeah, Williams effectively will have to come back from the dead the way that they're going about things, because they are just gradually getting worse.
Well, are they going to do something with 2017 like they did in 2014? Because they were pretty good in 2014, because as Lee has pointed out a couple of times,
no one else was.
No, yeah, other people got it wrong. Williams got it a bit more right than everyone else.
Yeah, it was engines, wasn't it? Everyone fucked their engines apart from Mercedes. And Williams managed to build the second best car with a Williams engine in it.
With a Mercedes engine, yeah.
Well done, won Formula One lottery.
Yeah, but if that's what they're planning to do again, to give themselves a good shot at finishing second, then maybe that's why they decided to, let's hit the kill button. Actually, we can't hit the kill button. Let's pretend to hit the kill button.
Let's stand over the kill button with our fingers hovering.
Let's press pause and enter the cheat code.
Yes.
Yeah. You see, I wonder whether they really wanted to push Bottas, didn't they, as their guy.
Yeah.
But has he really been the same since Silverstone?
No,
he hasn't. And they're not the kind of team who wants to have a number one and a number two driver, despite the fact Felipe Massa is the world's greatest number two driver. But that's not... I'm not trying to say he's a pro
You're talking about a world in which Rubens Barrichello is still alive. And
Imagine if Rubens Barrichello and Felipe Massa were in the same team.
No. 40,
what would happen then?
No points. Or somehow they would finish the exactly the same time in eighth. Every race, joint points in eighth. But it's Rubens Barrichello's birthday today. He's 44.
Happy birthday, Rubens Barrichello. Yeah. Still a great name.
It is. It's a grand name.
Mm. Right. Moving away from on track, we're moving slightly onto Twitter now on something that we've got on the running order as Tiffany Dell.
Yes.
Drove in one Formula One race.
Yeah.
For Ensign.
Versus Chris Flood.
Hi, that's me.
Who didn't.
No, I've never done this.
You've been fighting on the internet, haven't you?
I've done a little bit of fighting on the internet with Fifth Gear presenter Tiffany Dell, yes.
Is Fifth Gear still going?
We're still doing things, bits and pieces here and there.
While there's still rubbish Sky channels, Fifth Gear will still be on air.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I managed to antagonise, I think, Tiffany Dell, and therefore a lot of his followers, because... basically, Tiffany Dell was saying on Twitter that it was Spain was a great race, but you know you've got to take the aero out of it, out of Formula One, to make the racing interesting again. So I responded to his tweet on the Twitter, as Jean Todt calls it.
Did you get your PA to print it out for you?
No. I actually looked at it on a plastic screen.
Oh wow!
That moves when I move this weird pad on my laptop. Sort of follows my finger. It's very bizarre. But without aerotiff, cars would be slower. So it's a catch-22. Do you want slower cars with better racing, or do you want?
Sorry, carry on. I'm not going to derail it.
Do you want because I don't see why Formula One should be going slower as it moves forward.
It can't go slower. It's fucking ridiculous.
So this then started off a debate between, not a debate as such, but lots of...
an internet argument.
Yeah, lots of Tiffany Dell's followers started responding, saying...
did anybody wish you dead?
No, that didn't happen.
We've not gone full bottom half of the internet.
We haven't gone full bottom
half. Not YouTube comments.
We haven't gone YouTube comments or Reddit just quite yet. So people saying, for example, and this was the main argument came from people saying this point, which is less aero and less restrictions for me. Right now F1 seems to run on rails, but he said he's not saying that they're easy cars to drive, but
he is
basically what he's saying.
If it's on rails, it's a train.
I mean, you've got somebody saying here some of the best club racing is in Formula V, old Formula Ford or classic saloons, so, and they've got minimal aero.
Yeah, and everybody watches club racing.
That's it. Somebody's saying here, damp track equals less grip. Therefore, you know...
logic.
Well, yeah.
There's some science.
Advocating Bernie Sprinkler idea here. That's the secret to challenging cars and great racing.
So he almost needs named and shamed if he's back in Bernie Sprinkler.
His name is Xander Mahoney. So
not Xander Rossi.
No, Xander Mahoney with an X.
Xander, you're wrong.
Xander with an X is what I meant to say. Then you've got people saying, I used to race karts in -5 on icy tracks, and slick tyres are compulsory. Doesn't matter what the weather is, you race on slick tyres.
He's a liar. He's never done that.
But then you got a couple of people here who sort of back up my point. Someone said, why does less aero have to mean slower cars? How about more restrictions on aero and less on the engines? Which is a fair point. And then you got what's saying here. The thing is, we had faster F1 cars that managed to pull off more overtakes 10 to 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether that's somebody looking through Formula 1 through rose-tinted spectacles, as we've alluded to
I
before.
Think it's rose-tinted spectacles. Because you used to have races, especially 12 years ago, you used to have races ago, where there was nothing. Yeah. The only thing I would say about that is back in those days, when there was no DRS and curves and stuff, overtakes were exciting.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah,
overtakes aren't as exciting anymore.
That's because they were rare.
Well, exactly.
You could
yeah,
go
yeah.
weeks without seeing one.
It's like a bald eagle, man. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is 12 years ago you could go an entire race without seeing anything but Michael Schumacher because yeah. he would just take off and then just film him for yeah. an hour and a half.
Well, if you're at the German race where the local producers would cover him.
Yeah, but when ITV had adverts, I used to switch over to RTL for their coverage, and they even had Schumi Cam, where if they were showing anything else on track, they had a square in the bottom right-hand corner
for
of the
Michael
screen
Schumacher.
With just Michael Schumacher on all the time.
Yeah.
I have a
funny... But it's raised a question, like that little debate on Twitter between Fifth Gear presenter and ex-Formula One driver Tiffany Dell and me. raised a question in my mind, which I thought I'd bring to the fore here and allow our listeners to get involved with as well. And there are lots of media outlets who like to put down Formula One. And I think I've found not the perfect point of pressure point to push to make people sort of make the move and get things moving again. But it's definitely something that I don't think is being considered. What does a sport actually want to be? Is having an identity crisis, slightly. Does it want to be a sport where people primarily... It's just a sport for watching, for entertaining fans... and not much more than that.
Yeah, so, I mean, in which case, it has to be a sport.
Yeah, it has to be a sport, but in close racing. Or does it primarily... it could be a sport, but primarily does it want to be a sport? Or does it primarily want to be, as it has been in the past, a prototype formula where technological advancement, due to it being the pinnacle of motorsport, has eventually trickled down through road cars, and this has made the racing great... with it being the pinnacle of motorsport.
Yeah, but I don't think that's ever... I mean, stuff's trickled down.
But primarily, way up.
Yeah, but it does need, like, a mission statement, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, of course there's going to be racing, and of course there's
going to
be...
Has a mission statement? Is football, apart from, like, really good football violence sound again, but, like, it's not the... it's not football's mission to work out a really good way of looking after grass. It's not football's mission to work out really, really good new football boots. That comes as part of the package.
Yeah.
But it's not. That's not why they're doing it.
No, I don't know. And every 4 years, Adidas managed to screw up the concept of a football when they launch a new one for the World Cup, and everyone that isn't sponsored by Adidas says they absolutely despise it.
But like all those millions of years ago when Fangio was in Formula One cars... That was the whole thing of the gentleman races, wasn't it? Of people just going racing. And that was the idea, was people building cars to go racing. Not people building cars to make airbags.
Or building cars to sell cars. Like
the idea is to build a car to win.
Yeah, like we've spoken before about Mercedes using Formula One as a marketing tool to sell cars. It's probably something very similar to how Ferrari and Renault have treated it in the past. When they've both gone through successful periods. But it always will be an element of sport there, but it primarily needs to know what it's doing. And I think that's where there's been a conflict in between fans, between the sport, between the engine manufacturers, between Bernie Eccleston, because primary focus from all points of view is different.
But I don't think that's different on...
I'm not putting the sport down at all. I'm not one of these media outlets who's just being Formula One is broken and we hate it. Go back to the 70s when it was... No, I'm not saying that at all.
But the thing is, if you listen to Bernie, the whole thing that he's been harping on about for the last 12 months is we must improve the show. So that's what he wants it to be.
He is the commercial rights holder.
Yeah. That's the thing.
But the problem is, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I don't think Bernie's the problem. I think the teams are the problem. I stand by this.
Yeah.
Apart from,
a big part in it.
Apart from safety, as in what should we do to keep you alive? Will this keep you alive better? Right, great. We'll use that. Apart from safety, I don't think they should have any word in the rules. I think they should be given a piece of paper with dimensions on it and saying this is what you must adhere to be part of our formula. If you don't like it, Formula E is just down the road in a shed.
No, it's a tent. You've seen the tent. It's a big tent.
Yeah. I think it's an awning.
And they wouldn't like that because there's kind of restrictions on what kind of engines they can run.
Yeah, there really is. But I'm going to put this to the listeners to get in touch with us as to what you think the primary focus is now of Formula One and what do you think it should be. Is it the prototype formula where technology is put into the cars in order to progress them to go racing, and that technology eventually trickles down? That inherently makes great racing, mm-hmm. or it should do. Or is it to be a sport where the primary focus is racing, to put on a show for people so sponsors can throw money in and the manufacturers still end up using it as a marketing tool?
Or is it something different?
Mm-hmm. Or is it something different? If you've got your own ideas, please let us know.
Shout really loudly now.
That's amazing. Thank you for that, Tom in America.
Let us know your ideas. Yeah. You can tweet us at 3legs4wheels.
You can.
You can email us on 3legs4wheels@gmail.com. And you can get in touch on our Facebook page. If you just search for 3legs4wheels on Facebook, we've got the page on there.
Yeah.
I think you probably have to like the page to be able to leave a comment.
Yeah, like the page, leave a comment. And also
share it.
Well, I'm just going to point out now what you were saying before, Paul, but we get some email correspondence from people in America every now and again saying that they don't have a lot of people to discuss Formula One with, because, of course, the sport's not so widespread in the US. So why not come over to the Facebook page and actually see what see what other people are saying and find some friends on there in the States who are already... Three legs for dating. You never know, we might make a 3legs4wheels dating site. We're not doing that yet. But
oh, 3legs4threesomes.
No,
please,
no,
stop
no.
it. We know you're not well, but you don't have to be sick.
Yeah, this is true.
I'm ill.
So yeah, it's drop us a line on either of those and just let me know what you think. Whether it's whether it's the prototype formula, the sport, or something completely different.
Or a balance.
Yeah. Mm. So what's next on the agenda?
For those that like to stay on the fence.
Yeah. All right, Bernie.
But how well designed and aerodynamic should the fence be?
Well, it should be well aerodynamically designed enough to be attached to Danny Ricciardo's car. Did you see the size of the aero fence on his test?
Yes.
It was that made the one that was on Vettel's Ferrari at the beginning of the year look ridiculously small.
Williams, he was doing sheepdog trials at the same time.
Was he?
Williams win the aero test.
Well, Williams were testing next year's aero dimensions on this year's car.
No, it was to find out the aero drawbacks of this year's car.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, because I read that that certainly the width on the rear wing.
Maybe they were doing it as something to sneak something past. But as far as Williams said, it was to test the aero efficiency of that car. So the only thing I can think it might be is they know by sticking that massive big wing on top of the car how much extra downforce that would give the car.
And then they can subtract that.
I think it was something to do with wind tunnel correlations.
I know somebody did ask Williams, are you going to be running that aero package at Monaco? And they said, well, no, we can't. It's not legal.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fence that on Danny Ric's car was about half the width of the track. It would be a great defensive manoeuvre to make sure no one overtakes you at Monaco.
So if you remember a few years back in the Murray era when people made their cars the widest on the track.
Yeah,
he's coming into the pits for 4 new tyres and some chicken wire.
I like the idea of Lewis looking at that car with the big fence on going, interesting idea, I might employ this.
Yeah.
But he'd turn it into jewellery or something, or sample it.
Oh, it'd be bling, it'd be gold, like.
Oh, yeah. Moving on with the bling kind of subject, it's Monaco this weekend.
It is the most famous of all Formula One races.
And don't forget, everyone that's planning on watching all the sessions, practice is on Thursday.
Yes, because they have to
by Monegasque law, because it's a public holiday on the Friday.
Yeah, they have to have the roads open.
Yes. So, what are we going to be looking forward to this time round?
You don't get an awful lot of actual on-track passing at Monaco, normally speaking.
To be fair, though, we've had, like, we've had a few good Monacos over the last couple of years now. You know, it's not the processional worst race in the calendar. It usually has been.
No, I mean, if it stays dry, and you know, I think it's going to. If it stays dry, then we're looking at probably both Mercedes being quite close to each other out front. And I actually wonder if we'll see an overtaking manoeuvre by Mercedes driver on a Mercedes driver. Will they be brave enough to try something like that in Monaco?
I would
after last week.
I would love to be a fly on the wall in the briefing room when they're going through race strategies post qualifying.
Yeah, whoever's in turn one stays in position one.
Yeah, whatever happens in Monaco stays in Monaco. Yeah.
I've got a funny feeling if that happens and Nico gets into the first turn first, I think Hamilton's going to have a dodgy radio.
Possibly.
Yeah, sorry, man, didn't hear you.
No, you got...
He'll be there with a crisp packet in his helmet, scrunching it every time Bono comes onto him.
Doesn't need it, they've got to keep the tear-offs now, haven't they?
Out of the tunnel, down into that chicane, on the first lap, whichever Mercedes driver is behind will lunge down the inside of the other one.
Bold prediction, neither cars will emerge.
or if they do, there'll only be six wheels between the pair of them and will come out sideways.
Yeah.
That was Alex Wurz came out of the tunnel like that one year, didn't he, if I remember right?
Yes, I seem to recall that he did. And I think he went sideways down the escape road as well.
Yeah, Button had a big one there as well, didn't he?
Shumi.
Button was the reason they've got Padden there now.
Yeah,
Perez a few years ago.
Yeah.
One thing that we would hope to see at Monaco this weekend, after the historic Grand Prix last weekend, and look for this on YouTube if you can, is better cranes.
Cranes that work. Cranes that don't drop millions of pounds worth of car on the track.
Yes, that would be nice. I have never seen so many mortified marshals in one place. I mean, there was one guy doing a very good impression of Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. It was the full hands on the face. And
was it 1978 McLaren?
Yes.
Yeah, 1978 McLaren dropped from about 20 feet.
About 20 feet, right onto its wheels, which then kind of the front and rear suspension broke and it was just sat on the track.
There was a historic one at Silverstone last year, wasn't there? And Jim Clark's Lotus was in it.
Uh-huh.
And the... If there was a meme that came out going, "You've had bad days, but you've never had crashing Jim Clark's Lotus in turn one bad days."
you don't want that. But there's, I think if you do manage to watch it on YouTube, look very closely. I think the hoop from the car where they attach the crane actually detached from the car. I think the hoop is swinging from the crane. Ooh. So
it was behind some trees, so I couldn't really see it too clearly.
But
it looked bloody nasty.
That's why they wheeled it away in the end. I think when they realised we can't attach this crane again, we're just gonna have to wheel this away. Well, sorry.
There's a time where it doesn't matter how old your car is, you can't just use rust stop anymore.
No,
you got to get some car body filler on it.
Yeah, you have, or just put some more metal in it.
More metal.
Sounds like my CD collection.
More metal. Anyway, back to Monaco.
Monaco. What have been, in our opinions, your favourite Monaco race?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Jensen 2009, pretty good one.
You would say that.
96, where Panis won. I think only four cars finished.
Yeah.
And there was a time where we thought that no one was going to finish because I think most of the cars that retired actually retired within like the first half of the race.
Although there was like seven cars left with three laps to go, and then Eddie Irvine took care of that.
Excellent. Well
actually,
done,
last year, Happy Vettel makes it on my list because
last year's Happy Vettel was
Hamilton's pit stop.
Yeah, for comedy value, Sebastian Vettel, when everybody else has been massively awkward on the podium. What happened there? And then Sebastian Vettel going, "Don't worry, I'm happy."
We can't talk about Monaco without talking about Senna and Mansell.
Senna and Mansell, when Mansell had to make his pit stop, was that 91?
It was 91 and 92, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it wouldn't be 92, sorry.
98, where Mikasalo got an arrows round in sixth place non-stop.
Yeah.
No pit stops whatsoever. That was another wet race.
Wow. Yeah.
I think it was about three safety cars that year.
That's crazy. But
I mean, it's thrown up some absolutely blinding races in the past.
It has. I'm surprised as well that we haven't seen in recent years like a Monaco at Monaco, like a Belgium 98 style start where one car gets wrong into the first turn and then all the other cars plough into it and half the field is taken out.
We saw that in the Formula E. Can't remember if it was this season or last season.
Yeah.
Turn one disaster, yeah.
On a street circuit, it's always inevitable. What I'm saying with Monaco being such a tight circuit, and everybody ran down into turn one, I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner.
Yeah,
yeah. So
that was so weird, that Spa race.
It was, yeah. It
was I was at Rask, not right. It's a Raskas.
That's in Monaco.
Where's the hairpin?
I know what you mean. The hairpin. Lasos.
No.
Oh, yeah. I know the hairpin just after the start.
No, not that hairpin. Like after you go up a rouge.
Oh, Lacoon.
No, big long straight chicane, straight that corner
loop. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because we didn't know there'd been like a big accident at the start. And the next thing is Damon Hill came around in the lead.
Yeah.
And well, something's gone on because they're all going really slow. There should be more cars. There was definitely more cars on the parade lap than there are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I had some friends at Eau Rouge that year and they said they just saw a wheel rolling out of the way and some cars followed it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sorry. Ricardo Rossi.
That's the year of Ricardo Rossi.
Ricardo Rossi ploughed into the accident that had finished and started it all again.
Yeah. About 2.5 seconds late.
Yeah.
I did a sport cry being at Spa watching Damon Hill winning Jordan.
Yeah, that was a good race, actually.
Your emotional history is all coming out tonight. There's more and more sport cries actually turning up.
Yeah.
How were your feelings on the WWE pay-per-view last night?
It was good. I didn't cry. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was good.
That's an improvement. What are we predicting for this? Not necessarily 1, 2, 3, but what are we predicting that could well happen?
I'm going to say Mercedes are going to, whichever driver is behind, is going to try and make an overtake, and I think it will be very quickly shout, if it doesn't end in disaster, will be very quickly shouted down on team radio, and the lead driver, whoever that might be, will become very, very grumpy for the rest of the race. And
I think we will go back to,
and it'll become processional, I think.
Yeah, no, but I think we'll go back to Mercedes essentially almost taking one driver out and landing them fourth or third to split the drivers up, like they were doing towards the end of last year.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the tyre strategies, because they have gone for exactly the same strategies, both Mercedes drivers.
And of course we have the debut of Kitten Soft tyres this
weekend. We do have the debut of Kitten Soft tyres.
Max Verstappen will have a massive accident.
And Lewis
won't finish that race.
Oh, that's so last year.
Yeah. No, no, I think just he's on such a high after winning that race.
Well, I'll tell you what.
He's going into Monaco wanting to win a race. He is going out and he has taken at least two cars with him.
I don't think he's going to do that, because I think he will have been sat down and told, yeah, you're doing great, just don't believe the hype and wind your neck in.
Maybe, but everyone else around him is telling me he's the greatest driver that's ever picked up a wheel. Like, you know, there's people there going like, Max, I'm not being funny. You don't even need to plug that wheel into the car. If you just stand on the grid with it in your hands, you're guaranteed a podium at least.
There are five drivers who have gone for the super aggressive 10 ultra soft sets.
Mercedes.
Lewis Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Nico Rosberg. Daniel Ricciardo.
Who's going to win the race?
Max Verstappen.
He's going to crash.
And fifth driver?
Jenson Button.
Kevin Magnussen.
Oh. He's anti-climax.
an aggressive
came.
All of those drivers have gone for one set of softs, two sets of super softs, and 10 sets of ultra softs.
Kitten soft, please.
Kitten soft. Let's
call K-Max sounds like a Russian semi-automatic weapon.
Ferraris have gone for two sets of softs, two super softs, and 9 of the kitten softs. So, you know, they just give themselves that extra option during the race if they want to run longer. And then if you look down towards the bottom end of the grid, you've got, this doesn't bode well for Sauber, really, I don't think. Sauber have gone for one set of the soft, four sets of the super soft, and 8 of the kitten soft. And the only team who've gone more conservative than then are Manor, who have gone for just the 6 of the kitten soft.
And they've been consistently conservative, if I remember
right. Yeah, they have been consistently conservative. And it's not worked out bad for them every single time.
Mm.
They've actually done okay, but...
It's not covered them in glory either, let's be honest.
No, it hasn't, no.
they're not dripping in points.
No, and the two
closer than they were this time last year.
Yeah, the two softs, four super softs and seven ultra softs that Williams have gone for is around about the average of what the rest of the field have done.
But Williams will probably get it wrong and, I don't know, put Rubik's Cubes on.
Massa will crash. There's another crash for you.
Yeah, that's quite likely.
Yeah.
Do
you think we're going to see any shenanigans in qualifying this year, like we've had previously with Nico's, oh dear, I've locked up and I'm going off track?
By the way, somebody who doesn't like Formula One so much was listening to last week's podcast, Dan, and laughed at your supermarket joke, Nico Rosberg. So, so well done for doing the funnies. He was halfway to the supermarket when the yellow flags came out.
He was well off the circuit.
He was not a danger to anyone.
And I don't think he can have predicted those yellow flags. So anyone who says that he did that on purpose to get the qualifying stopped is a conspiracy nut.
Oh, it's
Dan, that was Dan pointing at Lee.
Yeah.
That makes for good audio.
Dan glares at Lee.
For our listeners watching in black and white,
Lee is wearing black. Yeah, I don't think we'll see many qualifying shenanigans. I'm really interested to see how this ultra soft tyre actually goes. Whether or not it's... Because they were tested at Barcelona, weren't they, in pre-season?
Yeah.
And they did like three laps at Barcelona before they were useless.
It suggests there's going to be a lot of pit stops, doesn't it?
It does suggest there might be...
Is a possibility in a race with a lot of safety cars.
Yeah. Very true.
And as you just said before, Lee, absolutely anything can happen at Monaco. And it's...
And it usually Murray's. What?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying not to go for that one. But
it's predictably unpredictable.
Well, no, we say that about lots of races, but Monaco is watched by the people who don't generally watch Formula One. Yeah. We've had the FA Cup final this last weekend. People who don't watch football watch the FA Cup final.
Motorsports Grand or used National.
Yeah. It's Grand National. Yeah, it's Formula One's Grand National.
Yeah.
People watch the Monaco Grand Prix, and they might watch the Grand Prix closest to their home city, country, whatever, just to for. It's good to see a global sport in your own country.
Yeah, but I've never got that of like people that would just watch the British Grand Prix, for instance.
Or the Monaco Grand Prix. Yeah, but it's casual Formula One watchers will watch the Monaco Grand Prix.
Casual Formula One watchers are dead to me.
Yeah, when I was younger, I used to have to watch just every race on my portable TV in my bedroom, except the British Grand Prix. My mum would allow that on the big telly.
Yeah.
Which was a massive 17 inches.
19. We rented from Vision Hire. You didn't buy a TV in those days. It used to go wrong every week.
It's a completely off. Totally off subject, but when I bought my new telly, I gave my old one to my dad because he was still renting a television.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
To the point where the guys obviously had that much money off him that dad said, do you want me to bring the TV back? So I'll get it. Some point. Maybe.
Just hold on to it for now.
Just go.
Pay for it about 10 times over.
Yeah.
He drove off in his Rolls Royce there.
I'd just like to make a side point as well. That there have been a few events this week in the lead up to Monaco, as there always is. Fashion shows.
The Cannes Film Festival.
Cannes Film Festival's been on. Lewis Hamilton has made public appearances at these places. But it's still void, not completely void on social media, but his posts, they're not him. Do you know what I mean? They're his people.
Yeah,
still his people.
It's Team LH that have been tweeting.
Yeah, and his Snapchat, which he
I reckon
does
he
from
probably
his
refers
phone,
to him as a squad.
Is you bet he does actually. And he squad goals.
Yeah.
He normally does a Snapchat from his own phone. That's how you know it's him.
Yeah.
There has his last Snapchat that he sent. Was in the driver's parade before the Spanish Grand Prix. So are we seeing a sort of reverse mentality, Lewis? I need to get back into the zone before I can carry on doing this now because I've got a real fight on my hands. And he's sort of stepping back a little bit. He's still got the engagements to make. still got the sponsorship videos to do, which is why there's still that social media presence. But are
I think he was at the Cannes Film Festival with L'Oreal hair care products, according to his Twitter.
But are we seeing more focused on the job, Lewis Hamilton, for a change?
I think so. I mean, if Lewis gets pole and can get off the line quicker than Nico, which it looks pretty ropey.
He might not win the race.
Do you know something? This must be a Chris thing, using more or less those exact words, because I'm looking at an email that we got from one of our listeners in the US called Chris.
Okay.
Who emailed, hey guys, not a lot going on, but after hearing you guys mention his social media presence, I decided to remind myself I'm a long cry from being rich and follow Lewis Hamilton on Snapchat. Interestingly, the last thing I've seen him post was pre-Grand Prix. Is this a sign of a more focused and determined Hamilton?
Mm. Well, there you go.
Or is it Mercedes dropping a hammer?
You think that he might be... You think Mercedes might be telling him to rein it in a little bit?
Pull it back. Let your people do the work. This is what your people are for.
We'll call him... American Chris. We'll call him that.
American Chris.
Mm. Yeah.
I just wonder if there's a whole load of backlash on social media after the crash that they had the other week.
Well, I'll tell you
and
what.
He's just avoiding being distracted by that.
Yeah.
Mercedes are posting, as they always do, Mercedes' official social media accounts, posting up on Instagram a quote from Lewis Hamilton, which I can't remember exactly what it said, but there's a quote from Nico Rosberg, which they posted up a picture of Nico looking rather suave. And it said, "It's Monaco is a real driver's track," to which all the comments were split kind of 50-50. It's just like, oh yeah, Nico for the win, and things like that. And then anybody who said anything against Nico was being shot down as an instant Lewis fan.
Yeah.
So it means just like, it's not an ultimate driver's track, you can't pass on it, it's just a procession. And then they're like, ah, Lewis fan, and, yeah. You know, straight away. So there's that. I can completely understand why he might want to take himself away from that.
Well, don't forget as well, in those situations when you get comments from people, it's not... I'm sure there's a few people that have tweeted up going, oh, terrible luck, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Chin up, champ, types of tweets. But even the ones that would be for him will be like, Nico's a dick, let's set him on fire. You know, it will be so,
so
polarized,
negative.
Yeah. And, you know, where even the... Even what people are thinking they're given to him is positive in their eyes, it's still pretty fucking negative.
I've got this here now, Mercedes AMG F1 Instagram. Lewis's quote says, "It's an incredible feeling making a car dance through those streets." And the comments, the two comments that I can see there are, "The very best of luck for this weekend, Lewis, checkered flag, star." And then somebody else has put, "This is your turn this year after you have been the best there since a few years. The victory should be yours." So not brilliant English, but you get the gist. And a little bit further, to scroll up a little bit so we can find the next Mercedes post with Nico Rosberg. Oh, this Toto Wolff one. "It's clear that we are under attack from more than one angle." So I don't actually know what he's trying to say there.
He was then, playing Total War, wasn't he?
He was playing, yeah. Call of Duty or something. Yeah. He's got his headphones on, but they're his Xbox headphones. They're not his Mercedes headphones, are they?
He's entered the wrong dialogue box on his computer.
But in a complete contrast, Nico Rosberg says, "Monaco is the ultimate driver's track." And the picture of Nico Rosberg there looking, as I say, looking quite suave.
Looking a bit Nico Top Gun.
Looking a little bit suave? Goose.
Yes.
He's there with the quiff and the aviator.
He looks a little bit like...
Britney Spears.
No. well, I guess it would be nice.
George Michael. He does look a little bit like George. He's missing the stubble, isn't he?
George Michael, that well-known driver who never sticks a car into a photo development shop.
Maybe last year.
Or into other parked cars.
Maybe last year when he pulled off the track, he saw a public toilet.
Maybe, you never know.
Yeah, this will be the same George Michael that fell out of his own car on the motorway as well.
Yeah.
But instantly,
he knows a good time, doesn't he?
Instantly, I look at Nico, the comments on Nico, on the picture that features Nico Rosberg, and it's a complete different turn. It's Monaco is a parade lap. There is somebody here saying Nico is the best driver, but there's someone there saying it depends if you let Rosberg cheat again. Hammer time. Lewis needs to win here and not have any mess ups with the car. So there is a bit of a split.
Mess
there,
ups so with the car while like not having enough wheels after turn three.
Yeah,
and I completely understand why Lewis Hamilton himself might have removed himself completely from that situation where he can see any of that. So, like, my team of PR people, you deal with my social media accounts. I'm coming completely off of it. I need to focus on what I'm doing. Because he's got to start clawing that 43-point gap back.
And the last thing he needs to do is engage with the internet bottom feeders.
Correct. Reddit.
bottom feeding frogs.
YouTube.
So, further down the grid, what do we think is going to happen in Monaco?
Further down, I think Williams are going to screw up a strategy call somewhere.
Sounds
safe. That's like saying there'll be 22 cars turn up for the first practice.
I wish that was a fucking special on Sky Bet.
Rob Smedley makes a poor decision. Yeah. 3-1. I'm on it. Everything I've got. Yeah. Take everything.
Monday morning comes. The genius of Smedley. No!
What's Massa and Bottas take a 1-2? Damn you, Smedley!
Yeah, we just thought in the simulations a 15 stop strategy would work. We were reusing tyres at one point.
The kitten sots were going back on. It was crazy.
I'm concerned for Haas this weekend. Monaco is notoriously bumpy.
It's bumpy and it's twisty at the same time.
Don't the Americans get upset about that? Nose. Isn't that Haas?
Haas. I'm
Haas.
From
Haas.
I'm from Yorkshire. I don't speak English. I am concerned about the American team in Formula One. Is that better?
Well, maybe.
Monaco is a bumpy and twisty track
with adverse cambers everywhere.
Yeah, they've got a front wing that has trouble hanging onto the car.
Mm-hmm. this is a fine point, Paul.
Do we think that Grosjean and Gutierrez, when their race comes to an end, be that at the checkered flag or otherwise, they are not going to have the same front wings on both their cars that they started with?
No, I think Gene Haas is cleverer than that, and Gunter Steiner and the rest of the team are cleverer than that, and I think they'll take that into account and
get out the gaffer tape.
Yeah. Get out the gaffer tape and raise the front of because the setup in Monaco as well, a lot of cars do actually sit quite high off the race track as well.
Yeah.
Which they have to do for the bumps and the grating.
They have to, yeah.
Obviously,
they've got to sit as low as they can, but it's higher than
making the car ride higher gives a
higher centre of gravity.
High centre of gravity, and it also improves the amount of turn that they get, and they need it for the Lowe's hairpin.
Of course you do, yeah. And the Raskas as well, and Teddy Nuge.
Yeah.
My house prediction for the... You've dragged me into it. prediction for the weekend is that Gutierrez's car is going to end the race looking like it's been in a bonus round in Street Fighter.
Are we going to see anybody embarrassingly crash at the you get those pathetic crashes where two cars just come together?
Yeah, and they just slide into the wall.
Yeah, and they just stop like Kimi and K-Mag in 2014. Was it lap one where they just sort of turned into the corner at the same time and just stopped?
Nasser and Ericsson, if anyone does that.
Doing that, I'm going Rosberg and Hamilton
into the Lowe's hairpin.
Oh no, they are not going to do a slow, embarrassing.
Not the last, not Lowe's hairpin. It'll be the last turn, not that chicane.
It's not actually called the Lowe's hairpin anymore, is it? Because that hotel's changed its name about 13 times since then.
Yeah,
it's called the High's S's. but after the chicane, after the swimming pool bit, that tight corner, right hander.
Oh, to back into Raskas.
Yeah, where all the crazy stuff happened and Schumacher parked. Yeah,
right on Raskas.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the Raskas Hotel, which apparently has got the best restaurant in Monaco.
Well,
It's got the best view anyway.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that silence a load of Formula One detractors on the first lap, Hamilton and Rosberg have one of these embarrassing crashes, get themselves all tangled up, hop out of the car, shrug the shoulders, shake hands, and then go and have a meal and watch the rest of the race.
That would be hilarious, and I would put money on that.
can't because you put everything you want on Rob Smedley getting things horrendously wrong.
Which means I'm a millionaire, so...
Oh, right, okay. Oh, you're getting paid out on that one before a wheel's even turned in anger.
Absolutely. Like, cash out.
Just, yeah, I'd like to put £3 in this, and he just passes you a bag of money. Like, just, but it's Wednesday.
Shut up, shop. Somebody's done it. School head office.
Now there's a Williams kill switch.
Yeah.
That's maybe it. Rob Smedley. Yeah, okay, so we've got Kimi Räikkönen and the human shrug, Rob Smedley, the human kill switch. You've written Grosjean's helmet here.
I have written Grosjean's helmet.
Would you like to elaborate?
I can elaborate giggity, a giggity bit goo. More. It's nothing to do with giggity giggity goo.
Oh.
So have you had a look at Grosjean's helmet?
I have had a look at Grosjean's helmet. It's well polished.
Is it?
It is.
Guys, can I just point out, we are not Top Gear. Or the Grand Tour, or whatever those three are doing now.
Yeah.
We are three legs, four wheels.
It's a well-polished helmet with... I'm going to stop being...
Is it bulbous or more, or like thinner?
No!
It's tapered.
Tapered, right.
As all Formula One helmets
are. Tell you what, let's wind this back. Robin Grosjean's head protection for the weekend.
Yeah, it's
giggity, dong! Giggity.
Roman Grosjean's above shoulder safety device for the weekend.
I love me some shoulder.
Oh, come on! That's not even a thing!
Oh, dear, Lee's just turned everything into euphemisms. There is, believe it or not.
Welcome to this week's episode of Lee Sexualizes Everything.
There is an actual touching moment coming up here. You can shut up, Lee. Drivers are not allowed to change the design of their helmets for race weekends. For races anyway, but for practice sessions, qualifying sessions, they can. And for the practice sessions and I believe the qualifying sessions as well, Romain Grosjean has a Jules Bianchi tribute helmet. In tribute, obviously, to Jules Bianchi, who scored the points for Manor 2 years ago at Monaco. So it's a nice touch from one Swiss Frenchman to a Frenchman.
That is actually a good one.
It is, yeah, and he's got number 17 on the back of the helmet as well.
I hope he doesn't get fined.
He can do it up until the race. He has to have his race issue helmet for the race, but he can wear the tribute right up to the race.
Do you know what? I miss Vettel having a new helmet every race.
I kind of do and I kind of don't because...
The white helmet with the Italian logo on it is pretty slick.
Yeah, but, with the Ferrari logo and the three German stripes.
Didn't Vettel used to retire the helmet design after a win?
After a win, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he's got so fucking many of them.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. He's made 16 quid so far in his Formula 1 career.
eBay must be loving Sebastian Vettel right now.
He's got them all. He keeps them.
I know, yeah. He's... in Sebastian Vettel Museum.
His house.
Yeah.
Hey, David Coulthard can have a museum. I've been.
Yeah, but it's not his house, is it?
Well, it's near the house where he grew up. No, it's run by his family.
If you've got achievements, stick them in your house. I wish I had an achievement. You can't stick PlayStation trophies on your wall.
No, you can't.
You can take photos of the TV and stick the photos on your wall.
Yeah, but that's even sadder than I actually am.
That is sad. shall we have a look at the mailbag? Because we've had a few people getting in touch with a few things that we talked about last week.
Yeah, we've already talked about, was his name, Chris with the email?
Chris with the email about Lewis disappearing from Snapchat.
As I alluded to. Saying alluded to. That's my phrase for this week. Alluded to.
We shall now allude to the mailbag. Because last week we said, send us your daft rumours.
Yeah, we want to start some stupid rumours in Formula 1.
Yeah, let's see what you think to these. Let's have...
Paul is actually having a look through the email account right now.
Let's have a look. Enrique Villarreal has said, quite like these, rumours out of Japan that Honda and Toyota are considering joining forces to co-develop the new 2017 power unit, but negotiations are apparently held up on whether to call it Honyota or Toyonda.
Like that.
He's also
quite far-fetched.
Yep. Although he gets better with these.
Yeah, let's have a look at this next
one. Rumours are that Bernie is looking to propose a new qualifying format for 2017. again. That's okay. In the realms of possibility.
Yeah, completely within the realms of possibility.
It's possible. He'll propose one for next week.
Yeah.
That is true. Rolling start with the order determined by the least amount of windbag comments throughout the season. Cars eliminated as they are passed by the car behind or crash out, torpedoing permitted. Last car standing gets pole.
That's not actually outside the realms of possibility, yep. Given that Bernie Eccleston has suggested other mad ideas in the past.
Mm. All cars start on the softest slick tyre, regardless of weather conditions. In case of dry weather, after 15 minutes, one turn will be doused with water every 90 seconds until the session ends.
Which is Bernie's sprinkler idea in qualifying format.
Yeah, for third world countries.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that could happen.
That's not actually beyond... I don't know that it's... within the realms of possibility, able for us to be able to start spreading the rumours, for example. Who else has sent anything through?
We've had an email from Ashley Hankson in Atlanta, Georgia. We're getting a theme here with people that get in touch with us. They all seem to be from the US.
Excellent.
Which is great. Go to the Facebook page and find other US fans to get in touch with, because a lot of people are saying to us on Twitter and via email, got no American fans to talk to about Formula One. There we go.
Yep.
He's given us... We've been down on NASCAR.
I mean, we have a little bit, but yeah. It's all a joke. I hope that everybody realises.
Yeah.
That. No, it's
don't call NASCAR a joke.
Top
Gear have already done that one a few years ago. It didn't go so well for them.
No,
he's given us quite a lot of insight into the way that NASCAR works. I don't think I've shared this one amongst you guys yet, but...
I already feel tired. You're going to finish me off.
Yeah, you're looking at 30 to 40 lead changes per race without using the pits.
Yeah, but
it's very different racing,
it's
though,
a very different. It's a very different form of racing.
Going back to the Tiffany Dell argument,
yeah.
Very little aero.
Yeah, and...
very few corners.
Fans are...
No, one continuous corner. Yeah.
Fans are more driver loyal than team loyal. So they will stick with their favourite driver regardless.
Same as Lee.
Well, that happens in Formula 1 as well. You do get people who...
Yeah.
I kind of feel like a little bit of an affinity towards McLaren and Williams, because they are two like the original successful teams when I first started watching the sport in the early 90s.
Mm.
They were the successful teams. I supported Nigel Mansell, and then, of course... McLaren have got that heritage of the Senna-Prost thing from like the 80s, and Senna was still driving for them right up until 93 he was driving for them. So I've got that sort of McLaren-Williams sort of thing, but I've got my favourite drivers as well. I've got drivers in the sport that I like now, and I've got favourite drivers going way back through time that if they swapped teams, I would have still followed them, much like Lee follows Jenson Button when he goes from whatever team to another team.
From a supermarket to his house.
Yeah.
Yeah, the restraining order hasn't kicked in yet.
From his porch up to his bedroom.
Don't need his restraining order when he doesn't see me.
I wondered why you wanted to get yourself one of those Red Bull camo style race suits. I just thought you were trying to be a full kit wanker.
Yeah, no, the camouflage in Monaco is just dressing up like a champagne bottle.
But it does seem like in Formula 1, most people tend to follow teams rather than...
Do you think so? I thought that was the minority.
Yeah. I would say from what I've seen, it would be more team followers than driver followers.
But it's always, when you go to a race, it's always driver flags or driver T-shirts.
Or country flags.
Yeah, there's country flags, but generally with a driver's name written across them. But...
I think you probably see it more as being team followers just because the Tifosi are very visible and very vocal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
they are everywhere.
It's not a minority in Italy. No, no.
No. No, it's Ferrari or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, even when there's been other Italian teams like Minardi.
Toro Rosso,
kind of Italian sort of ish.
Well, Minardi were more Spanish, weren't they?
No, they were Italian. Founded in Faenza.
Yeah, which is where Toro Rosso are now.
Which is where Toro Rosso are now, because they took over their old headquarters.
I'm sure there was a Spanish connection to Minardi.
Fernando Alonso?
Yes.
No, not that one.
Sponsor-wise, they were sponsored by Telefonica for a while.
When Alonso was there. Yeah. But no, Minardi were an Italian team, and apparently made
No, they weren't.
Yeah, they were Giancarlo.
Giancarlo Minardi was Italian.
They were sponsored by Telefonica before Alonso, because the Minardi was that horrible green colour for a while, wasn't it?
Oh yes, it was.
And that was Telefonica.
Yes.
Did they have Pedro Diniz in it then?
That's a possibility. They may have had Luca Badoa.
Maybe, yeah.
But Luca Badoa was Italian as well, wasn't he? So.
And Pedro Diniz was just owned by his dad, who owns every supermarket in Brazil or something.
I'd still argue that he was one of the better pay drivers that's been in the sport.
Pedro Diniz?
Yeah.
He didn't do bad.
He didn't do well, but he didn't do... He didn't do a Chilton.
He did better than...
Chilton.
Toro Takagi.
Chilton.
You really don't like Max Chilton, do you?
Chilton.
Lee stuck. Somebody want to reboot him?
to boot him if you are.
Yeah. Yeah, we already know he's re.
You can't boot me. This is my crib.
Okay, now he's re. Shall we end it there? I think we've covered everything.
Yeah, I think we pretty much have. We're going to make some bold predictions.
We didn't cover my favourite story of the week.
What's that?
The beginning of the silly season.
Yeah, we could do some silly season talking if you want.
Actually, we did have a silly season story.
Yeah.
Carmen Jorda.
She wants to test for Formula One this year.
And she's now racing in an amateur series and coming 12th or something.
No, she finished 9th out of 10.
Oh, was it 9th out of 10?
Yeah. She beat somebody. Max Chilton.
Yeah, Carmen Jorda's now racing in the amateur series at Renault RS01. Series, and there's lots of names in the finishing order that I didn't recognise, and then I saw Carmen Jorda 9th out of 10.
And yet she wants to get back into a test. Has she actually driven an Enstone car?
No.
She's simulator work, but as far as I know, she didn't even do a straight line speed test.
I don't think she's done a speed test.
No, which is what most drivers start doing. Maria Di Viotto did a straight line speed test for Manor when she had her accident. When unfortunately she had her accident. Mm. That appears to be like that's the first test that I think Formula One drivers, development drivers, test drivers do before they actually go around circuits.
Mm.
It does tend to be on places like airfields,
yeah,
and things like that, rather than actually at circuits.
I think the stunt, let's just stick someone in a car for publicity for straight line tests, is done now since the accident with Marie.
Maria Di Viotto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't think that's why Carmen Jorda's had a straight line test.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just, you know, it's too much of a risk to stick somebody in a car like that if you don't think they are fully ready to be in that car.
No, I mean, Carmen Jorda was never fast in lower formula anyway. Mm. I did see Virtual Statsman discussing her on Twitter with somebody.
Yeah.
The other person was saying that she was good, and he was shooting this particular tweeter down saying, she isn't and I have the numbers to prove it.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want to argue with Virtual Statsman.
No, see, he has the numbers. You cannot. We gave him a shout out in the last podcast, but yeah, he has the numbers. Don't argue with him.
I don't mean this to sound bad towards women in Formula One, because I think like a really good female driver in Formula One would be great. But I really do think with the, not from myself, but from the stigma from other people, probably inside the sport, to be honest, I think when you do get a female driver in the sport, she needs to be good. You know, she can't toddle around the back or something like that, because I think that would do more damage to women in motorsport over the rest of the, you know,
yeah, because it would be a case of, oh, she's just there for publicity, well, it would and making up the numbers. If you get a,
it would instantly look like a failed experiment.
Didn't we have a rumour that said that Danica Patrick was going to sign for Haas in place of Esteban Gutierrez?
Oh yeah, somebody did send that one in.
Yeah, that was something I think you shared with us earlier in the week.
At least Jordan, though, when Jordan's Formula One team was around, at least he had the decency to just hire a model.
Yeah, no.
There's some honesty there, isn't there?
Yeah. Paul's just having a look through the email account, see if you can find who it was who sent us the.
Someone tweeted me some rumours as well, but I was scrolling through and I've had loads since then. I can't find it. I'm sorry, mate.
you can really just feel the preparation pouring out of this podcast, can't you? All the work that we...
like how we work on the fly and things like that.
I see. I'm sick today. Like, I feel really bad and the whole ship's felt a bit. I'm not saying that, you know, how important I am, but, you know, I think the evidence clearly speaks for itself.
So Monaco then, have you ever been to Monaco, Lee?
It was Doug.
Doug?
Yes, it was Doug Pirtle.
Ah,
yeah. Oh, Pirtle!
Has to replace Esteban Gutierrez with Danica Patrick for the Circuit of the Americas. Danica Patrick's moved to Haas full-time in 2017. Bernie Eccleston quoted as saying, Dan Patrick, I've watched him for years.
That's believable.
That is very believable.
I think that is probably the one we're going to have to go with and start spreading.
Yeah.
So
far, unless somebody else out there can do
better. If you can beat that,
send us
it in, but yeah. I'll tell you something, Doug, you have set the bar pretty bloody high with
that one. That is believable.
So high that we nearly forgot you.
But right, before we go, and I can go to bed and feel better when I'm asleep, what do we think of
when you become a Viking?
And unicorns are real. But what do we think of my favourite Formula One silly season rumour of Nico to Ferrari and Alonso to Mercedes?
Nico to Ferrari, not going to happen. Alonso to Mercedes, probably not going to happen.
ESPN did post up an article about...
imagine Rosberg
flirting
ploy
with Ferrari, and what did Sebastian Vettel think of it? And he said he didn't mind as long as he wasn't flirting with me. So,
I genuinely think when you see how Vettel winds Rosberg up in like press conferences, it would end in a full-on fight.
Yeah, I think Vettel and Rosberg would be worse teammates than Hamilton and Rosberg are, purely because we've seen how funny Sebastian Vettel can be in those press conferences, and it's always aimed at Nico Rosberg every single time. And Rosberg bites. He doesn't just let it go. He has to come back with something. It makes it 10 times more hilarious every single time.
I mean, the Nico to Ferrari thing, Niki Lauda's shot that down.
Niki Lauda doesn't control Ferrari.
No, he doesn't.
Niki Lauda doesn't technically control Mercedes. He's a non-executive chairman.
So, but Niki Lauda was shooting that down on Auto
Sport.
He's
going to, isn't he?
Yeah, it's in his interest too.
But Toto Wolff didn't help the situation by saying, if Nico decides not to resign, and he did very much put the ball in his court in it, he said we have a few drivers to speak to, and Fernando Alonso is certainly an option.
Yeah, and Alonso tried to speak to Mercedes, but when they were renegotiating Hamilton's contract, they promised that they wouldn't speak to anyone else. So,
well, apparently Alonso was all but signed for 2014 for Mercedes, mm-hmm. And he decided to take the McLaren Honda drive instead because he thought it was the better option. Whoops!
Oh dear. We'll leave you with that thought.
Yeah.
Get in touch on email, threelegs4wheels@gmail.com, Twitter @threelegs4wheels. If you ask nicely, we'll give you our own Twitter accounts. I know Lee's a total shunt.
Yeah,
and he's on Twitter as well. I'm kicking a man while he's down.
I like talking to people. It's nice. Treat me.
And drop us a comment and a like on the Facebook page as well.
Yep.
And looking forward to Monaco this weekend.
Absolutely.
And we will see you next week.
Yes, we will, and we'll be live blogging the race.
We'll be live blogging... I almost forgot that. We'll be live blogging the race, and then I will be disappearing straight out after the...
So if there are any safety cars, you're in trouble.
My gig doesn't start until 3:30, so I've got till 3 o'clock as my cut-off point, and I've got to be out.
You've got to be gone by 3.
Yeah.
So this is the sort of conversation that should be had when the mics are off.
No, it isn't.
We'll be live blogging the race, and if you hear me typing fast, that's probably why.
Ciao.
So, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.